wanted nothing more than to claw her sistership to pieces with lance and broadside. From the viciousness writ upon her face, I thought she might even be tempted to ram the other vessel in her rage. The ship gave a tremendous shudder beneath another barrage. The lights sputtered across the chamber. "That was no lance strike," I said.
"Look!"
The Heor drew my attention back to the oculus.
"Well, that's not good."
Three vessels sailed in an elevated engagement sphere at a standoff distance, too far from the wrath of our guns unless we broke off from the Eternal Crusader. Their delineation runes marked them as vessels unfamiliar to the vengeful spirit's memory banks, Crusade-era victory-class cruisers belonging to no legion. I watched as the rearmost of the three daggerish vessels, thick with the flies of its lesser escorts, trembled in the void as it fired a city's worth of shipwide stabilizers. The impact struck us even before the ship's prow-mounted accelerator coils had flashed with their release. The vengeful spirit heaved around us, metal groaning under tension, bruises discoloring Altio's dusky skin. She gave a snarl that had no place emerging from a human throat. The Heor grunted as the ship stabilized.
"Shield breakers," he said.
"Sailing with minimal escorts," I replied. "That's bait if ever I saw it."
"Sure enough, but it's one hell of an opportunity."
He wiped his mouth on the back of his hand.
"What's more important here, killing Sigismund or claiming resources for the Long War?"
He had a point, and I was of a mind to encourage his rare tactfulness. I opened a voxlink to Abaddon, where he waited in his boarding claw. "Ezekiel?"
"We felt it,"
his voice crackled back, marred by interference.
"Nova Cannon."
He paused, doubtless reviewing the data from within his helm's tactical feeds, calculating how much damage they could inflict upon us before we reached the Eternal Crusader. If the imagery suffered battle interference up here on the bridge, it was likely little more than a spread of distortion across a helmet's retinal feed.
"Proceed as planned,"
Abaddon decided, as we'd all known he would.
"Our escorts will catch up after we engage. We'll hold a quarter of their fleet alone if we have to."
"We can chase the cruisers down," I argued. "We can silence those long guns for good." There was logic to this. Nova cannons require an immense sacrifice in time and effort to prepare, fire, and reload, and were near worthless at close range. With Abaddon's order, we could tear through those three victory cruisers like a mythical Terran lion ravaging through a helpless herd of extinct Terran elk.
"Should we not board them and claim them for ourselves? Think of the value of such prizes." "Don't be tempted by lesser prey, sorcerer. It's a juicy ruse to lure the Alpha Predator away. They know if we go for their throat, we win almost at once. So they offer up tempting targets to test our resolve."
"The vengeful spirit is our greatest game piece on this board," I replied to Abaddon. "Let us win the war first. Then you can face Sigismund."
"I will have his head,"
Abaddon snapped. His famous temper kindled at the threat of being denied close-quarters slaughter. I could practically sense him trying to wrest it back under control.
"Whatever they attempt is meaningless once we're aboard the Crusader, and nothing they can do will stop us boarding it. Ignore the ripe targets they lay in our path. Proceed as planned."
I tried one final time. "We are here to raid, Ezekiel. We are here to gather our strength, not deplete it. We should take those ships for ourselves." Abaddon's reply was a static-laden dismissal.
"Valakar is fleetmaster. Let him take them, or kill them as he sees fit. I want Sigismund, Kaon." I feel the hand of fate on my shoulder. This must be done."
There would be no arguing with him. Every syllable that left his fanged mouth seethed with vindicta. Our greatest strength and our deepest flaw, embodied by Ezekiel, who has always been the best of us. I wondered how much of his eagerness was a desire for vengeance and glory, and how much was desperation to prove himself against the Legiones Astartes hero that had taken his place as first favored. Any warrior of the Nine Legions that says he fights without bitterness is lying. There was more, and it was not tied into our gene-forged bodies or the preternatural depths of our bitterness. Abaddon was driven by a hunger far more mundane. Warriors throughout history have always defined themselves by having the courage to face their enemies, and by the quality of the foes that fall before them. Of course Abaddon wanted Sigismund dead. I spared a look at Morianna, who stood by Abaddon's empty throne. She could not overhear my conversation, for she lacked access to the vox, but she still smiled when she saw me take note of her. I said nothing to Ezekiel. There was nothing to say. The link went dead, immediately punctuated by the rattling shake of the ship around us once more. Nova cannon projectiles, hurled by circular racks of gravitic impellers and accelerator spirals, detonated in plasmic cloudbursts the size of celestial bodies. The vengeful spirit tore through the detonation's savage aftermath, increasingly alone as our escorts fell ever further behind. Initially, we had been at risk of outpacing them with Ultio's aggressive charge, but now they were truly forced back. We could survive a sustained Nova cannon barrage. They could not. "We are about to be dangerously alone," I said to no one but myself. Morianna's smile was an unreadable crescent. It could have been sincere or vicious. I could not tell.
"Have faith, Iskander," she said. "Trust in Ezekiel. Destiny rides at his side this day, and the gods are bearing witness to his deeds. These are his first steps to becoming the vessel into which the Pantheon pours all of its promises."
I sneered at the sentiment. "I trust Ezekiel completely, prophetess. It is your gods that I mistrust and despise. My lady, if you believe Abaddon will ever become their vessel, you have gravely misjudged the man you admire."
"Time changes all things, Iskander. Ezekiel is a soul of singular vision."
"Your serene smugness makes my gorge rise," I told her with exaggerated politeness. "And I am telling you, Morianna, you did not see the expression he wore when he rammed the talon through his reborn father's body. Abaddon is everything Horus is not. Your gods may plague us. Some of us may even pray to them in times of dire need, but the son will never fall into the duped slavery that held his father in thrall. The sooner you see that, the sooner you will see why we follow him." She laughed aloud as the deck shivered around us.
"How confidently you speak of the future. Are you a seer now?"
"I'm a man who knows his brother." She paled at the force of my tone, perhaps suspecting she had pushed me too far. Nefertari and Nagual drew near, the huntress playfully regarding her crystal claws, the great cat giving a low, burbling growl. I had not summoned them, yet they had read my mood perfectly. "Remove this civilian from the bridge," I ordered them. For the very first time, Morianna looked hesitant as the demon cat and the winged alien regarded her with cold gazes.
"I am Ezekarian," she said,
and I could not help but laugh.
"Well, that means Ezekiel is sworn to heed your counsel," I replied. "And it means I will not kill you, Morianna. It does not mean I want you on the command deck in the midst of a battle."
"I'm staying here, Kaon. Your slaves won't harm me."
"I say again, I am pledged not to kill you."
"I said nothing about not harming you.
If I crushed your spine and plucked your eyes from your face, you could still mule your prophecies to Abaddon."
She swallowed, believing me, and finally falling silent.
"Nagual, Nefertari, take her away. Guard her somewhere that any boarding parties will not be able to reach."
Nefertari narrowed her slanted alien eyes.
"It is time to leave, Monkey God Whisperer."
Nagual reinforced her words with a snarl. Morianna backed away, dignified in defeat, though I could hear the rhythm of her quickened heartbeat as she retreated. When the three of them had left the bridge, Luhio approached me once more. I had the sudden and disquieting notion that he had retreated from Morianna's presence, hiding from her.
"She makes my teeth itch," Luhio said quietly.
His eyes were glassy and unfocused.
"I can't decide why."
"I know why," I ventured.
"You do?"
Some of the caution bled from his gaze, now she was gone.
"It is because she speaks like a Primarch.
Everything she says is wreathed in certainty and inevitability, and dripping with righteous invincibility. The same deluded cries of our failed fathers. My patience for that kind of preaching ran out around the time we were fleeing from terror with our tails between our legs. Lahior showed his metal teeth in a grin. Some were bronze in colour, some a dull silver. He replaced them periodically. I'd never thought to ask what they were really made from.
She does talk like a Primarch, he agreed. Though she drools less than Angron ever did. I'll give her that.
Ultio thrashed in her suspension tank, her mouth silently wide, lips peeled back from her teeth. The choir of vox gargoyles and drifting servo skulls gave voice to her scream, loud enough to set the beastmen braying in worship. In response to her feral shriek, the vengeful spirit heaved into a heavy roll, ramming its way through an ocean of streaming torpedoes. They were pinpricks against the anamnesis's skin, the buzzing of worthless vermin.
Blood, she mouthed. And blood, her gargoyles hissed above us. Blood crystals in the bare void, and twisted iron turned to melted slag, and bursting bodies and decompression gasps, and charred steel and rancid chemical fire, and...
On and on she spat the hissing curses, caught in a trance, staring at the Eternal Crusader. The beastmen shouted prayers and devotional braying to their entombed goddess, the heart and soul of the ship, loud enough to set the air shivering. On the Oculus, the black lance of our sister ship speared ever closer. It's difficult to describe the vengeful spirit in battle without straying into theatricality, because a simple retelling of its deeds defies both reason and physics. You must bear witness to it fighting in order to believe what she is capable of. Even before the anamnesis was installed as the flagship's machine spirit, reports from the Horus Heresy listed the vessel as performing manoeuvres of impossible agility and unleashing weapons of unknown, unnatural origin. And these reports, while true, were just the beginning. The Eye changed the vengeful spirit in ways that went beyond the crenellations and bastions along its back and the dark goddess at its heart. Existence inside the Eye had bred insanity and lethality into its iron bones. We tore past the Eternal Crusader that night, close enough that our void shields shrieked with contact discharge against theirs. Voices immediately overlapped as they shouted status updates. Shield strength reports were bellowed across the chamber. Three of the beastmen crew roared that the boarding pods had been fired from their housings. A fighter escort wing had already spat free from their launch bays, tasked with shooting down any missiles tracking our boarding claws. The pilots' chatter spilled across the vox as they flew and fought and died. Weapon masters and gunnery overseers bawled orders into their consoles as the Oculus filled with the Eternal Crusader's shield-lit spinal castles. Voices, 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 sirens, fire, thunder, shrieks, detonations. Death. It sounded like Prospero. It sounded like Prospero burning under the Wolf King's rage. And then we were past them. We dived through a loose phalanx of the Eternal Crusader's escorts, our guns silent, every cannon and turret across the ship holding its breath. Projectiles still rained and burst against our shields, but we lanced onwards without firing back. Ultio was the reason why. She silenced the thousands of cannons slave to her will, and her worshipful crew obeyed. She rolled in her suspension tank, arcing her back, every muscle in her body taut, sinews standing out on her flesh with almost emaciated ferocity. Her jaw was clenched hard enough to risk shattering her teeth. Her eyes, the same dark shade as my own, were rolled to show bare whites. The ship heaved around us, gravity generators straining to keep pace with the speed of our turn. Weighted air slammed many of us from our feet. I remained standing by locking my boots to the deck. On the Oculus, the Eternal Crusader was beginning to lean into a hard turn, one that would still take a minute or more to complete. The vengeful spirit, without slowing an iota, pulled up, inverting its pitch at full speed, rolling to face the way it had come. At the moment we aligned with the Eternal Crusader dead ahead, the engines roared even hotter. Physics disallows such a manoeuvre at such speed. But it took place in the span of my twin hearts beating no more than 10 times. The Eternal Crusader was still in the first motions of its turn. The Anamnesis raked at its image with her clawed hands, and lance-fire streamed silver-white from the vengeful spirit's prow. Torpedoes flew behind those glittering beams. A city killing's worth of incendiary rage caught the Eternal Crusader unprepared, spreading migraine prism light across its suffering void shields, then bursting them to rain fire upon its unprotected hull.
"The Crusader's shields are down, and Lord Abaddon is aboard her,"
Ultio voxed to the fleet.
"Cripple her, but remember, she is mine to kill once this is over."
The Anamnesis leaned the vengeful spirit into a more conventional role, coming about to face the closest Black Templar ships. There was a deathly light in her eyes. She wore the expression of a child learning it can inflict pain on helpless insects, burning them with sunlight through a focusing lens and pulling off their legs and wings. And that is when the true fight began. The Eagle of Old Earth was a destroyer, aligning itself into an attack run before we had fully come about. Its weapon batteries banged into the void, spreading impacts across our shields. And there it should have ceased, using its speed and manoeuvrability to escape. Instead, it lingered for a second volley, its captain likely buying time for the Eternal Crusader to finish its own course changes. But Ultio was done with her sister ship. That was Abaddon's prey now. The Anamnesis had a fleet to kill. The Eagle of Old Earth shields lasted all of 7 seconds beneath our broadsides as we cut past. The cityscape of Hecutor, macro cannons along her port side, screamed their sunfire against the Eagle of Old Earth's naked hull, annihilating the smaller ship in a supernova of bursting plasma. Ultio did not even react. She was already focused on the vessels ahead, above, below. The Black Templars had our flagship isolated and were closing in for the kill. The ship shook endlessly around us, gravity fading or pressing down upon us with punishing force as a consequence of Ultio's movements. Lahior, his features twitching with the bite of his cranial implants, worked from a handheld hololith projector, studying a flickering layout of the flagship. Red runic markers denoted the estimated position of Black Templar's boarding teams. I tuned out his words as he conveyed information and orders across the vox, keeping Delvaris and his Riven squad leaders appraised of the intruders' locations.
"Fewer than I'd have expected," he said to me.
We both knew why. The bulk of their strength was still aboard the Eternal Crusader, luring Abaddon and our inner circle into their territory.
"More than enough to keep Delvaris entertained,"
I replied with a calm that I did not entirely feel. "And to slaughter several hundred mortal crew," I thought, though I kept the words from Lihior's mind, not wishing to inflame the pain engine in his brain and distract him from his task. He spoke into the squad relay vox for another few seconds, then regarded me with twitching eyes.
"Oh, this is woeful and bloodless, brother. We should be down there fighting with Delvaris."
"Or aboard the Crusader."
"Or there,"
he agreed. I tuned into Delvaris's vox feeds, only to be met with raucous screaming, howling, jagged laughter and leonine roars. Bolters crashed in the background. Wherever Delvaris was, he was reaping his share of lives. The Riven was Delvaris's warband, a host of secondborn I had helped create over time, binding demons within mortally wounded warriors, and whenever the chance arose, prisoners we took in battle. In later years, Imperial forces have encountered Black Legion squads wearing the demonically tainted armour of Loyalist chapters, as I and my apprentices have bound Neverborn into our captives. Before my journey to Terra and my surrender to the Inquisition's care, I kept a coterie of such bodyguards myself. Blood Angels, Ultramarines, Imperial Fists, and several of their successors, their souls shattered and subsumed by the presence of the demons riding their husks. It makes for a delicious insult on the battlefield. In those early days, however, Delvaris's warband were largely comprised of sacrificial volunteers from the Sons of Horus and the World Eaters, as well as prisoners from the other legions.
"Oh, the Riven are enjoying themselves,"
Lahior muttered. He was rocking slightly now, unable to keep still, suffering from an erratic adrenal energy he could do nothing to discharge. I would have told him to join the fighting, but he would have refused me. He was a war leader, an officer, and a lord in the Legion, and his place was coordinating his brethren. He would do his duty, no matter how much he craved to shed blood in its place. Altio sailed us through an ocean of enemy firing solutions, treating the ship around her like a steed to be reined to her will and coaxed to give her ever more speed. She acknowledged every one of our foes in a descending list of priorities, one that shifted moment by moment based on threat calculations of armament, support, and positioning. Her attention was absolute. She chased her prey, one after the other, with meticulous precision, inflicting enough damage to sunder shields and cripple or kill before immediately refocusing on another target. The heavy cruiser Adamantine sought to bar our path and block us within a crossfire of several vessels. The vengeful spirit banked into a roll like a bullet leaving a rifle, our port and starboard broadsides fireworking into the conflicted night, discharging at the vessels around us as we twisted and dived towards the Adamantine. Our prow batteries were lances and graviton pulsar arrays. The former ruptured the Adamantine shields in a disintegration of shredding light, before the latter crushed the warship's forward decks in a mangling compression of molecules. Its bridge was among those decks that collapsed beneath this manipulation of its mass, and Altio torpedoed the still sailing wreckage to send it spinning aside. It was not quite enough. Altio finished the execution up close. The vengeful spirit rammed the headless cruiser aside, savaging it with a second graviton volley that collapsed another immense section of its superstructure. Within a heartbeat, she was rolling us again, chasing another foe. I could take it no more, this realm of thunder and shaking walls. I closed my eyes and reached out, seeking a battle I could contribute to. I found Amuriel almost at once. I rode within my brother's mind as his assault team made its way through the Eternal Crusader. I could not be with them in the flesh, so I journeyed with them in spirit. As I sank into Amuriel's senses, an unwelcome familiarity gripped me. I had been aboard the Eternal Crusader twice before, both times as an ambassador to the Imperial Fists in shared theatres of war. How strange it felt to enter those halls not with curiosity and respect, making overtures to another legion in the Great Crusade, but with blades in our hands and hate in our hearts. I clung to Muriel's thoughts. He felt me there and did not resist, though I would not exactly call it a welcome either. Through his senses I experienced the battle. The air clattered with the metallic coughing of bolt guns and the shrieking beams of the few Volkite weapons we possessed that still functioned. Each breath I drew was spiced with the physoline stink of shell propellant or the scorched ozone of steaming metal. Amuriel's warriors comprised a ravening horde. Squad by squad they massacred their way through the Eternal Crusader, butchering even unarmed mortal crew, wasting precious ammunition as if we possessed an abundance of such riches. All caution was cast aside. Our men could not be reined in now, even if we had wanted to do so. The Black Templars met rage with wrath, charging down corridors to crash against the advancing disorderly tides that had invaded their domain. Again and again we were locked against shield walls of ceramite plate, where vision thinned to the motions of flashing blades and rattling chains. We bled. We sheeted with sweat. We swore. Fists and pistol grips pounded against helmets. Chain blades carved their whining way through armor joints or sprayed useless sparks against reinforced plate. Amuriel needed room to swing his sword. In close quarters, a warrior needs a shorter thrusting blade, not a duelist's longsword. And many were the times Amuriel's blade was fouled by a poor angle or snarled in a Templar's body, struggling to withdraw after a killing blow. The warriors we faced ground against us in an unceasing horde, sounding out battle cries and oaths to the Emperor, roaring into our faces. Those behind us, our own brothers, howled in frustration, unable to reach through the tight ranks to kill the foes they had waited centuries to face again. Blood misted the air. Tabards and robes ignited under flamer gouts and spraying sparks. Every heartbeat was punctuated by another crumpling crack of a bolt shell detonating inside a body. We killed blindly in that press of arcing weapons and flashing limbs. The tide would turn in one tunnel, only for another squad of Black Knights to meet us at the next junction or around the next corner. I remained peripherally aware of the vengeful spirit around me, shivering and shaking as the other battle raged. I could make out Lahior's murmurs as he relayed orders to the Riven and his own squads from the War God's Maw. Riding Amuriel's mind was exchanging one sense of helplessness for another, but at least aboard the Eternal Crusader I was with my brethren and could be of some use to them. Amuriel called his racing, bleeding squad to halt. Several of them actually obeyed. "What is it?" I sent to him, speaking within the mist of his senses. His thoughts were a furious stream of consciousness in the near darkness of the Eternal Crusader's repetitive corridors.
"Scanner, need my Auspex. The fighting is unreal. Gods, these bastards can fight. We're falling behind Abaddon."
"You are not behind. You are ahead of almost every other assault force. Only Telemachon and the Shrieking Masquerade are ahead of you."
"How do you know?"
he asked.
"Where is Abaddon?"
"He's embattled in the secondary starboard colonnades," I replied. "His boarding pods took suppressive fire on approach, so he's fighting undermanned. And I know because I know where all of you are. I can hear the songs of your thoughts even over this distance."
"Where is Telemachon? I have to link up with him, and he's refusing to answer the vox."
I resisted the urge to laugh, which was no easy feat. "Telemachon seeks the glory of slaying Sigismund alone. He will not come back for you, Amuriel. He is thinking of nothing but casting the Black Knight's severed head at Abaddon's feet as a gift for our lord. Move west and regroup with any of your sergeants still able to follow orders. There is a concourse not far from here that leads to the spinal tributaries." Amuriel spat acid onto the deck.
Thank you, brother. You should be here, Kaon. I could use you at my side."
I wanted nothing more than to be there, instead of bloodlessly watching from afar as our legion won its first victory against the Imperium. "Abaddon cannot trust me. Not after Daravek."
"Perhaps,"
he agreed, too easily for my tastes. Amuriel moved again. I slipped free of his thoughts and opened my eyes. Ultio was screaming. It took me a moment to realize it was a cry not of rage, but of pain. Blood stringed through the fluid of her suspension tank. The cables that crowned her, binding her skull to the logic engines at the top of her life tomb, were tangled and leaking coppery oil. Psi stigmata showed in an ugly patchwork across her skin, some of it taking the form of cuts and rents, others showing as bruises. As weariness descended upon her, or as pain crept across her thoughts, her control over the vessel slipped. This was nothing I had not seen many times before. The anamnesis forced to speak orders to the command deck crew, instead of relying entirely on her control as the ship's machine spirit. She was doing so now, maintaining a barrage of clear, concise orders.
80 degrees portside yaw, accelerating at once. Fighters and bombers to flock to the Falcata as we come about. Formulate attack runs against its defensive broadsides. Shields failing in 30 to 10 seconds. Begin the siphon of plasmic conduction to relight the shields. Starboard 4 gunner decks, be ready to fire in 12 seconds. Target the Orphidian Gulf as it passes through our firing solution. Shatter its shields and vox the ecstasy of fire with orders to chase it down. Prepare the Ultima torpedo array for vortex lock upon the Prideclad when we shift to the 4th subquadrant. Shields failing in 25 to 5 seconds. Brace for inevitable bombardment as the shields fall. There. The Arcus and the Sword of Sigismund are bringing lances to bear. Brace for impact! Brace! Brace! When the shields fell, they fell with a seismic sound wave that jarred the vengeful spirit to its industrial bones. The shuddering intensified as weapons struck the naked hull with impunity. Yet Ultio, bleeding and bruised, was immersed in the killing fields before her. The ship banked and rolled with her will, or moved at her command when her will was no longer sufficient. Impacts rained against us. Our weapons spat back. Beastmen roared around me. Lahior abandoned his console and shouted for his arming slaves. Saliva had formed a sheen on his chin, and by the light of his bloodshot eyes, it would not be long before he lost himself to the nails. "Borders from the blade of the 7th Sun. They've gained the Primus tributaries."
That was dangerously close to the bridge, and though the riven was scattered across the ship, it was the war god's maw that held the sectors around the command deck. Lahior was going to join his warriors. Three heavily augmented beastmen from Lahior's ruddy-furred Korngor clans brought his heavy bolter and ammunition feeds. Another carried his chain axe, and yet another bore his helmet. Lahior tore the weapons from their clawed hands and leaned forwards for the last of the beastmen to affix his crested helm in place. "May the god of war be with you," I said, not without an edge of sarcasm. His eye lenses glowed as his helmet seals locked, and he hefted the brutal cannon he favoured no matter the battlefield.
"What did you just say?"
"Nothing," I smiled. "Good hunting, brother."
"Don't lose the battle when I'm gone,"
he said, as if I had anything to do with Ultio's talents in the art of war. I could give her orders, but she needed none. This was her arena, not mine. Lahior summoned the handful of his warriors present on the bridge and led them into the corridors that formed the vengeful spirit's veins. I briefly listened to the clicking vox chatter as he rallied several of his squads on the way. It synergized, in a way, with Ultio's stream of orders and the shivering thunder impacting upon the hull. A perfect storm of sound. I turned back to the Oculus as the cruiser Arcus, once of the Imperial Fists war fleet and now of the Black Templar's Armada, detonated in our wake. At the heart of the braying beastman herds and a world of dark steel shaking around me, I seated myself on Abaddon's throne, eyes half-lidded with the onset of a meditative trance as I watched the Black Legion's fate playing out before me. Time passed. Lives ended. Warships died. I watched fire tear through pressurized sanctuaries and cease to exist once it kissed the void. I watched the blazes slough the flesh from bones before breaking those bones down to ash. I watched torpedoes streak and swerve and drill and detonate. I watched lance beams carve through consecrated armor that had endured the tides of hell itself. I watched ships full of my brothers crumble in ruin, populations of the mutated and the mad sucked in corpse falls from sundered hulls. I watched vessels that had anchored proudly in the skies above Terra, now dying in droves, as Sigismund's sons were reduced from an armada to a fleet, and from a fleet to scattered formations. I watched it all. It was art. I listened to my brothers shrieking and killing and dying. I listened to my cousins, those still loyal to the throne, roaring and bleeding out and spending their final breaths on foul oaths that cursed us and mocked us for our treachery. I listened to Ultio's endless orders, not only to the crew, but to her syntagma war robots and cyborgs, directing them to stand with the Riven and the war gods more. I listened to the grind of straining metal and the thunder of guns that could and had killed cities. I listened to the sirens and the screams and the mechanical pulses of my armor's biosign systems. I listened to it all. It was music. I sensed the spillage of souls into the warp. I sensed the outburst of panicked, confused, blood-maddened, death-drunk spirits of the violently slain, tumbling into the realm behind reality. I sensed the wet laughter of gorging demons. I sensed the ebb and flow of the Empyrean's winds blowing harder behind the veil, fueled by the glut of freed souls. I sensed death after death after death. Those who did not know they were dead, those that fought uselessly as they fell into the waiting, gaping maws, those that cried wordless defiance as they were torn apart by demonic claws. I sensed the demons that would be born in the aftermath of this battle. I sensed how they loved us for this slaughter, and how they hated us for its mortal limits. For no matter the slaughter we perpetrated, it was never enough. Never enough. I sensed it all. It was beautiful. Hatefully beautiful. And last of all, I felt when Abaddon reached Sigismund. I felt the moment's curious formality, and felt the searing emotions in my lord's twinned hearts. I felt the vindication of glory to be earned. I felt the thwarted fury of a man forced towards a fate he did not yet adore.
I closed my eyes, leaving the rolling, burning, fighting, vengeful spirit behind. When I opened them, Sigismund sat enthroned before me.
"So," he said, "you have returned."
Chapter 14. Hammer and Anvil. He burned with life. It seared through his veins. The righteousness of his cause haloed him, bathing him in the corona of a faith that was wholly unreligious, but faith nevertheless. I stared up at him beyond the ranks of his huskarls, those warriors who we would learn in later wars were called sword brethren. And I realized then just how it was that Sigismund still lived, even after all this time. He had survived for 1,000 years because he refused to die. He hated us too much to sleep in his grave with his duty undone. Sigismund watched us through the chamber's surreal calm. Blood marked his armour and tabard. Medals of honour earned from the Black Legion bodies spread across the hall of white marble and black iron. He had not been idle in defence of his ship. It seemed he had chosen this chamber of reverence as a place to make his final stand.
"So, you have returned,"
he spoke to all of us, his voice ancient but uncracked.
"I never doubted you would."
His sword brethren were battered, bloody, and exhausted. Our warriors facing him were no different. Several were still breathless and bleeding, their wounds scabbing over, even now, with the effects of their gene-wrought organs. Abaddon was filthy with gore. The souls of those he had slaughtered to reach this chamber circled him, unseen and silent, a halo of smoky misery trailing away into nothingness as the warp pulled them into the oblivion of its maw. Sigismund rose. He held the sword of his office, what the Imperium knows as the Sword of the High Marshals. The Black Sword, his favoured weapon for so many centuries, was sheathed at his hip. The straightness of his back and the power within his posture surprised me, though the dozens of my dead brothers spread across the deck should have dissuaded me of any illusions that Sigismund would be enfeebled by age. He had carved his way through several of the Shrieking Masquerade, although, looking through Amuriel's eyes, I did not see Telemachon or Zaidu among the slain. Abaddon stepped forwards to meet him, then gestured at us to lower our weapons. Sigismund did the same to his men. Both commanders were immediately obeyed, and the insane serenity stretched on while the eternal crusader shuddered and burned around us. The oculus, I noted, was tuned to watch the vengeful spirit. Our flagship rolled in the void, streaming fire and ice and air from her wounds, her cannons screaming silently into the darkness. She was dueling several smaller vessels, twisting to them each in turn, cutting them apart methodically with lance volleys that streamed through space, bright as the arcing flares of Terra's sun. There was a shiver of disorientation as I witnessed the burning ship where my body sat in Abaddon's throne, so distant from where I watched behind Amuriel's eyes. That sense of dislocation did not last long. Adapting to such sensory perceptions was an elementary aspect of the principles of Tiscan meditation. I was taught the techniques before my 8th birthday. Abaddon addressed the approaching knight.
"I see time has blackened your armour, as it has ours."
Sigismund stopped within blade reach, but neither of them lifted their weapons.
"I looked for you," he said to my lord. "Has terror burned in the fires of your father's heresy? I hunted for you day and night. Always lesser men blocked my way. Always they died so that you might live. But I have never stopped searching for you, Ezekiel, not through all these long years."
Abaddon's rage, ever his greatest weapon and most crucial flaw, had deserted him. I watched him through Amuriel's eyes, and he looked ravaged.
"Don't make me do this," Abaddon said. "Don't make me kill you."
He even cast his sword down with a crash of iron, such was his passion.
"You cannot have lived all of these centuries and seen nothing of the truth, Sigismund. The Imperium is ours. We fought for it. We built it with blood and sweat and wrath.
We forged it with the worlds we took. The Empire is built upon foundations of our brothers' bones.
The old knight stared impassively.
You lost the right to speak for the Imperium when you brought it to its knees. If you loved it as ardently as you claim, Ezekiel, you would not have pushed it to the brink of ruin.
My lord overshadowed Sigismund, standing far taller in his Terminator plate. He gestured to the warriors around the room, taking them in with a single sweep of the talon. They were all in black, though fighting on different sides.
We are the Emperor's angels.
It horrified me to hear the dark kindness in Abaddon's tone. When he needed his wrath more than ever, he was trying to reason with the one space marine that could never be reasoned with.
We didn't rebel out of petty spite, Sigismund. We rebelled because our lord and master played us false. We were useful tools to bring the galaxy to heel, but he would have cleansed us from the Imperium the way he purged the Thunder Legion before us, wiping us all from history like excrement from his golden boots.
Sigismund was a statue, his face carved from coloured marble.
I'm sure some of you are convinced you fell from grace for those pure, virtuous ideals. You have had many centuries within your prison to repeat those claims to yourself. But they change nothing.
I have seen Abaddon quell crowds and strike fear into entire populations with the ferocity of his invective, and I have seen him win over some of our most hostile enemies with the fire of his charisma. But in that moment, as he stood before Sigismund and came face to face with the avatar of the Empire we had burned and been forced to abandon, I believe he suffered a rare, rare moment of conflict within. Sigismund was a man to whom duty and law were inseparable from living and breathing. He cared nothing for our righteousness. He did not call us arrogant. He did not even say we were wrong, because he cared nothing for the whys and wherefores of what we had done. We were traitors. We had betrayed our oaths. We had risen against the Emperor. That was enough. He could not, or would not, see that we had risen against the Emperor for the sake of the Imperium. And yet I confess that seeing him standing there, regal and ancient in his absolute certainty, I felt the same doubt that I sensed in Abaddon. Distinct and cold, this feeling lasted only a moment in time, nothing more. Perhaps its brevity was because I did not turn from the Emperor for the sake of the Imperium, or for the sake of any ranted truth. I and my legion rebelled to survive. We were betrayed, and so we damned ourselves just to keep breathing. There were as many reasons to rebel as there were rebels. Sigismund remained motionless and said with infinite patience,
You keep speaking, Ezekiel. Do I look as though I am listening?
I saw the shift in Abaddon's features as he discarded any hope of Sigismund understanding our cause. I saw Rhinus there as well, chastening himself that he had dared to hope Sigismund would be able to understand why we had turned from the throne.
No pity, no remorse, no fear, Abaddon said with a smile. Blessed is the mind too small for doubt.
He did not wait for a reply. He held out his hand for his sword. Zaidu moved forwards, picking it up and placing it in Abaddon's hand before backing away. Sigismund mirrored the gesture in reverse, handing the sword of the High Marshals to one of his huskarls, who moved away with the relic held in reverence. Sigismund drew the black sword in its place, raising it to salute Abaddon with the same cold formality he had displayed unceasingly thus far. Abaddon raised his blade, and Amuriel flinched, not of his own accord, but through the exertion of my will. Instinct ran through me with quicksilver breath. So fierce was my ache to witness the fight that I had to restrain myself from taking hold of my brother's body and stepping forwards in his place. Sigismund had the advantage of reach with his long blade. Abaddon held the advantage of strength in his Terminator plate. My lord would fight with the weighty disadvantage of the talon upon his balancing hand, but it gave him a devastating weapon if the jewel allowed him a chance to use it. Sigismund would be faster in his ornate power armor, but there was no way of knowing how much age had slowed him. And still the gathered warriors on both sides stood in awed silence across the devastated chamber. It seemed human thralls were not permitted here. None lay dead on the mosaic floor, at least, leading me to believe it was some kind of nightly sanctum for the Black Templar's rituals. 9 of Sigismund's sword brethren stood opposite, almost 40 of our own warriors. I could not make out exact numbers without forcing Amuriel to turn his head. Abaddon and Sigismund's blades met for the first time, a skidding clash that sprayed sparks across both warriors. I thought it might have been a signal for both sides to charge, for us to butcher Sigismund's elite while our lords battled, yet there was no such uproar. I felt the acidic squirt of adrenal narcotics pumping through Amuriel's bloodstream, injected by his armour in response to his battle hunger. He flinched and winced with the crashing blows of the warlord's blades, and he was not the only one to follow the fight with such ferocious focus, doubtless imagining he wielded a sword in Abaddon's place. Their crashing blades brought a storm's light to that place of austere darkness. Lightning sheeted across the cracked marble walls and illuminated the stained glass windows, bathing the cold statue faces of Black Templar's heroes in flashes of even colder illumination. Those stone worthies looked on, only marginally more stoic than the watching warriors of both black-clad hosts. In the years after this duel, those of us fortunate enough to witness it have spoken in terms both trite and profound of how it played out. One of Zaidu's preferred claims is that Abaddon led Sigismund the entire time, that our lord laughed all the while as he toyed with the ancient Black Templar before delivering the death blow. This is the tale related by the Shrieking Masquerade's various warbands, and one that Telemachon has never contradicted. Amuriel once described it in terms I preferred, saying that Sigismund was ice and precision, while Abaddon was passion and fire. That bore the ring of truth from what I saw through Amuriel's own eyes. Sigismund knew he would die. Even if he defeated Abaddon, he and his warriors were outnumbered 4-1. His ship still rolled in the void, still burned within, as our boarding parties swept through its veins like venom in its bloodstream. But if the battle for the Eternal Crusader was still in doubt, there was no such mystery surrounding the endgame within this chamber. Even if fate, or a miracle of faith, spared Sigismund, the rage of 40 bolters and blades would not. And Sigismund's age did show. It slowed him, the finest duelist ever to wear ceramite, to a pace that was no faster than Abaddon in his hulking Terminator plate. He lacked Ezekiel's enhanced strength in that great suit of armour, and age and weariness robbed him even further. He was already decorated in the blood of my slain brothers. This was far from his first battle of the day. Were his old hearts straining? Would they fail him now and burst in his proud chest? Is that how the greatest of Space Marine legends was fated to end? I found the signs of Sigismund's age unconscionably tragic, a fact Ezekiel later mocked me for, calling it a symptom of my maudlin Tiscan nature. He remarked that I should have paid more heed to the fact that the Black Knight, at 1,000 natural years of age, could still have stood toe-to-toe and matched blade-to-blade with practically any warrior in the 9 legions. Age had slowed Sigismund, but all it had done was slow him to a level with the rest of us. I did pay heed, of course. The outcome of the duel was never in question, but that did not mean I was blind to Sigismund's consummate skill. I had never seen him fight before. I doubted anyone but the 9 legions' highest elite could face him and live even now, and at his best he would have rivaled any being that drew breath.
Iskander.
Sigismund's artistry with a sword is best summed up by the way he moved. Duelists will parry and deflect to keep themselves alive if they have the skill to do so, and if they lack that skill, or simply rely on strength to win battles, then they will lay into a fight with a longer two-handed blade, trusting in its weight and power to overcome an enemy's defences. Sigismund did neither of these. I never saw him simply parry a blow, for every move he made blended defence into attack. He somehow deflected Abaddon's strikes as an after-effect of making his own attacks. Even Telemachon, who is possibly the most gifted bladesman I have ever seen, will parry his opponent's blows. He does it with an effortlessness that borders on inattention, something practically beneath him that he performs on instinct, but he still does it. Sigismund attacked, 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 and he somehow deflected every blow while doing so. Aggression boiled beneath his every motion.
Iskander.
Yet Sigismund was wearing down minute by minute. Air soared through the grate of his clenched teeth. Abaddon roared and spat and laid into him with great sweeping blows from both blade and talon, never tiring, never slowing. Sigismund, in contrast, grew ever more conservative with his movements. He,
Iskander,
was tiring beneath the pressure of Abaddon's rage. The spraying sparks of abused power fields now showed his stern features set in a rictus of effort. In so many battles, whether they are between two souls or two armies, a moment arises when the balance will shift inexorably one way over the other. When one shield wall begins to buckle, when one territory begins to fall, when one warship's shields fail or its engines give out, when one fighter makes a cursory error or begins to weaken. I saw it happen in that duel. I saw Sigismund take a step back, just a single step, but his first of the battle so far. Abaddon's lightning-lit features turned cruel and confident with bitter mirth, and Iskander! I opened my eyes. It took me several seconds to detach my senses from Amuriel's. So strong was the temptation to dive back into his mind and watch the duel between the two warlords.
Iskander!
Ultio called again. She was embattled, calculating attack vectors, flinching with the psi-stigmatic pain of impacts against the vengeful spirit's bare hull. Blood trailed from her nose and ears, leaking into the amniotic fluid. The bruises that had decorated her flesh at the battle's beginning had ripened and split open, layering her skin in fresh gashes. Her left arm looked broken at the wrist, and she cradled it close to her chest. One of her eyes was swollen closed. Worst of all, parts of her body had been reduced to raw muscle, leaving her partly flayed. The war was carving her apart. If her wounds were a representation of the vengeful spirit's damage, Abaddon would be returning to a half-slain flagship. A brother's urge overcame me, the need to pull her from the battle, to protect her. Its intensity stunned me, but we were long past such foolishness. She had been the machine spirit of Legion warships for far longer than she had been my mortal sister, and the anamnesis had always claimed to recall nothing of her human genesis. The entire bridge was stained red with emergency lighting and flooded with shouting crew, yet I heard her gargoyle's synthetic murmur.
"Something is wrong," they chorused. "Can you not feel it?"
The oculus showed warships sailing, burning, breaking apart. I saw nothing wrong, nothing grave that required my attention so suddenly. I turned from the screen to the hololithic mess that tried to track and display every ship committed to the battle across every engagement sphere. It offered no answer either, save that we were winning. Slowly, surely, we were winning. For the sake of the Imperium and the warning they would need to carry, the Black Templars would surely fall back soon. Their blockade was already torn asunder with spatial holes we could break through, but our captains were caught between feasting on their loyal brethren and not wishing to risk turning their backs on them. I calmed my breathing, letting the adrenaline of Abaddon's duel bleed away. I did feel something. A presence. A disturbance. If you have walked through the wilderness and heard the distant roars or howls of native predators carried on the wind, if your skin has prickled in a too human reaction of instinctive awareness, then you know the feeling of which I speak. I leaned forwards in Abaddon's throne. Ultio, bring your Auspex arcs around and sweep sub-quadrants 55 to 59.
That is behind us.
I'm well aware of that.
Piercing alignment,
she replied, her attention still divided.
Resolving. Resolving. I see dead space in the named quadrants, nothing but the void.
Tight beam focus on sub-quadrant 56, I ordered. That was far behind us, directly behind us. It was the way we had come, the very sub-quadrant in which we had emerged from the ice storm. Several of our bulk landers and troopships remained there, held back from the shooting war. They were specks on the Oculus, several minutes sailing away, even at full speed. Ultio spat her wordless anger at another vessel nearby, raking it with her starboard guns and rolling the vengeful spirit slowly away. I saw the momentary flicker of distraction on her features as her crew cast the Auspex scan in a tight beam array to the coordinates I requested. She could no longer manage the ship's systems alone, engaged as she was. One of the Zangor beastmen crowed at me in her raucous tongue. I'd already read the meaning from her mind before she finished croaking in what passed for her kind's language. "From the storm," she said. "They come from the storm." I cursed the shifting god in that moment, which is as close as I had ever come to uttering a prayer to Zeech. As I watched the specks multiply on the Oculus, streaming in from the storm's edge, I mouthed one word, tasting its foulness on the back of my teeth. Daravik. He had followed us. I did not know how, let alone how he had made such decent speed, and whether his fleet had suffered in the effort, but he was here, and he was behind us, and our fleet was already utterly engaged in breaking the Black Templar's blockade. If Daravek attacked now, he would finish us. We would never recover from this evisceration between the descending hammer and the unbroken anvil. And once we were devastated, he would finish the remaining Black Templars and sail undeterred into Imperial space, stealing our glory. If he killed us here, then to capstone our legacy of failure, all we would have achieved was to pave the way for him. Ultio! I called out. The ship heaved around us, a jarring slam that struck with enough force to kill power to countless critical systems. The lights died, gravity died with them, then returned tenfold at the wrong angle, no longer keeping us on the deck, but throwing us backwards. Bodies hurtled through the dark air, colliding with one another in bone-shattering impacts and pulping against the bridge's walls and ceiling. In the darkness, Ultio screamed. I don't mean she bellowed in fury or that she cried out. She screamed. It was torment made manifest, a sound that even the lifeless gargoyles conveying her vocalizations could not rob of its pain. I did not know what hit us. Damage reports clattered from unattended consoles. I was sure the ship was dead in space, only disabused of that belief when I felt the thrum of deep full thrust resonating through me. We had not been rammed. We had not been struck by a Nova cannon. Ultio had accelerated full burn, without fail-safes or brace warnings, channeling the vengeful spirit's entire reactor sector's output into the engines. I twisted in the dark, clawing my way through a gravity 40 times in excess of Terra's, hearing the creaking of bones among the pressure-crushed crew. The soft tissue of my eyes was distorting, clutched tight in invisible grip. I could feel the harp-thread snaps in my eyeballs, each one a dagger pinprick of blood vessels breaking. The stench of blood surrounded me from others nearby, some crying out as they bled, others lost to unconsciousness, the reek of their suffering forming a miasma that coated my skin. Similar scenes of destruction were playing out across the ship. "Cease!" I said to Ultio. "You're killing your crew!" I felt her reach back to touch me, mind to mind. She so rarely did that. The anamnesis's psychic component was essential to her function, especially in commanding her syntagma cyborgs and war robots. But she always shunned allowing me to get too close to her thoughts. What spilled across the connection now was an acidic flood of boiling, overlapping panic.
"Ezekiel is wounded. I must reach him. He is our lord. He cannot die. We have to reach the Eternal Crusader. We have to—"
But she was wrong. She had to be wrong. Abaddon could not be wounded, and I would prove her wrong as soon as I saved the ship's crew from a crushing death in the pitch darkness. My suit's sensors registered the gravitational force still rising, now powerful enough to rupture organs. In her frantic grief, she would slay us all.
"Slow the ship!"
"But Ezekiel is hurt.
You are killing us, Itzara. You will kill every soul aboard the ship."
She buckled. The ship fired retro thrusters and banked its reactors, and the gravitational forces eased breath by breath.
The emergency lighting reactivated, showing me a realm of crimson silhouettes and scarlet shadows in an artistic recreation of a charnel house.
"I am not Itzara,"
she whispered through her gargoyles.
"I am Ultio, the Anamnesis."
I let that go unanswered as I took stock. Bodies that I had feared were corpses began to move. Crew casualties would likely be significant, but the vengeful spirit held the population of a small city. I had brought Ultio back from the edge before she could do too much damage. Or so I hoped. The image on the Oculus reformed from static nothingness to a cluster of warships we had left behind, now left to give slow chase. I hauled myself back to Abaddon's throne and keyed in a code to realign the Oculus once more. It flickered to the chosen coordinates, showing an armada of 9 Legion's vessels pouring from the edge of the storm. I recognized not only individual patterns of craft, but individual ships themselves. Vessels I had sailed beside or fought against during my years within the Empire of the Eye. There was no doubt now. The Lord of Hosts had followed us.
"Ezekiel,"
Ultio said aloud, her tone lost, distracted. "Be silent," I sent to her, the command ironclad. If her fears were true, the crew, the Legion itself, must not be informed. Not yet. Not until the Ezekarian had weighed its options. On the Oculus, our fat-hulled troop transports were wallowing away sedately from their pursuers, while the picket of escorts we left to protect them were doing what little they could to cover the retreat. Already Daravek's vanguard ships were overtaking them, cutting them apart with lance strikes and torpedo barrages. Behind this slaughter came the cruisers and battleships of the 9 legions, their crews no doubt euphoric and disorientated in equal measure at their freedom. It would not take them long to realize that fortune or the will of the Pantheon had brought them back to reality with the perfect chance to silence us forever. Tejak limped over to me, spitting blood. In the chaos of Ultio's fear, the bridge overseer had lost his weapons.
"Must fight, master. Must fight, Lord of Hosts. No choice. Must fight."
More ships broke through into real space, with yet more bladed shadows taking shape behind them. Time was anything but an ally. I could practically hear the gods howling with laughter at this latest test.
"Master,"
the beastman repeated, whining for an answer. I silenced him with a gesture and reached out with my senses. "Ezekiel." Nothing. Nothing at all. "Amuriel."
"Kaon, throne of terror, we—"
"No, listen to me, Amuriel. Tagus Daravek's armada has torn its way into reality behind us. Our rearguard is already burning. We are caught between the Templars and the Legion host and cannot fight both. I cannot reach Ezekiel. Where is he?" Our psychic link wavered. I sensed, more than heard, bolt gunfire, and felt the kick of Amuriel's bolter in his fists. "Amuriel."
"We are embattled. God's piss, Kaon. When Sigismund fell, it drove those bastards into blood madness. But we are close. Another few hours, brother, and this ship is ours."
"Sigismund is dead. Abaddon killed him." I sensed the clatter of more bolt fire and the heft of a heavy power sword in Amuriel's hand. "Amuriel, I need answers. The fleet is dying. There is no time for this."
"Ezekiel is with Falcus and Iliaster. The Aphotic Blade is evacuating him."
Once more, dread made its icy way through my veins. "Abaddon is wounded." His answer was the breathy, exhausted ache of battle heat. I could sense him slipping from me. "Amuriel, you have to abandon the Crusader. We have to regroup. If we remain divided like this, Daravek will tear us apart." Red heat and flashing pain bleached our telepathic link. Amuriel had been struck by a bolt round himself. He was gone, either dead or too wounded to maintain the necessary concentration. I could not reach Falcus or Iliaster, no matter how I tried, not with my powers, nor with the mundane connection of the Vox. I was entirely in the dark. "Telemachon," I tried, plunging into the buzzing, venomous nest that passed for his mind. His psyche opened like a blossoming flower in welcome, closing with savage glee around me.
Alexandru, he purred.
I could sense him fighting, weaving his sword dance through his foes. He was exultant, laughing as he fought. You have to abandon the assault and lead the others off the Eternal Crusader. Daravek has broken free behind us. His exultation turned to poison. I felt him suddenly seeking to repel me, to throw me out of his thoughts.
Coward! We can take the Crusader. We are mere hours from victory. Ezekiel would never allow this retreat, Kaon.
What has happened? What happened to Ezekiel?
He is with Phalcus and Iliaster now, but if he lives, I will tell him of your treachery.
If he lives? Tell him, Macon, for the sake of all that is sacred, what happened?
He did not tell me at once. He invited me to see for myself, opening the viperous pit of his memories to allow me insight within. The perversions of Telemachon's brain patterns were beyond my taste and tolerance, and although he lacked psychic strength, he possessed a supreme sense of will. His beckoning stank of a trap.
"Tell me," I ordered him,
and for a wonder he replied.
"They fought. Abaddon won, but was wounded. That is all that matters, isn't it?"
There was no time to deal with his pettiness. He'd already wasted precious seconds better spent elsewhere.
"Get Abaddon off the ship and ensure none but the Aphotic Blade sees that he is wounded."
I felt him bristle at the orders.
"Who are you to command me?"
"You wish to argue this now, of all times? Get all of our warriors back to their boarding pods."
I sent the words knife-like and raw into the meat of his mind, caring nothing that it hurt him, caring even less that he took a dark and drooling pleasure from the pain.
"Abandon the assault on the Eternal Crusader, or I will leave you there to rot as the Templar's captive plaything."
"We can take the Crusader, you filthy coward. The Legion has never conquered such a prize, and it is within my reach. You think you can deny me this glory? Is this your pathetic vengeance for failing our lord? You wish to drag me down into failure with you?"
I was already disentangling my thoughts from his, ready to cut him free. He sensed the thinning of our contact, and roared at me with the kind of frothing, feral desperation I would have expected from Lahior in one of his rage seizures. I brushed his anger aside with ease. He had no telepathic talent himself.
"You have your orders, masked prince. Obey them or be left behind."
I opened my eyes once more, back to a world of strained red lights and beastmen crews bleeding and braying and cawing. Tajak still looked at me, his beady animal eyes pleading for a command. Before I could speak, the oculus resolved into the familiar face of Tagus Daravek, saliva stringing from his chin and jowls, a smile of ruthless self-satisfaction upon his disease-fattened features.
"Ah, Iskander!"
He turned my name into a sound of hateful luxury that lasted unpleasantly long on his tongue.
"Where is Ezekiel, assassin? I have come to offer him one final chance to grovel and acknowledge me as the Lord of the Nine Legions."
Lahior would have made a cutting remark. Telemachon would have used his wit. But for better or worse, I am not my brother's.
"I'm going to kill you," I said.
"Those are words I've heard you speak before, Kaon. Let me guess what your next words will be. You are about to demand to know how I managed to follow you."
"Not quite," I replied, and cut the communication link to spare myself his oozing smirk. "Tajak," I said, turning to the waiting overseer, "ready the crew to fight." As he grunted and left, I looked up at Ultio. Her eyes were glazed as she saw through her Auspex scanners and the trajectory calculations of her guns. I hoped it was that alone, and not the shock at her sensing Abaddon's injury. Her psychic bond with the Legion's Lord had served them both well so far. But if Abaddon did not recover from his wounds... No. The truth was that it did not matter. If Abaddon did not survive, there would be no Black Legion. We would devolve into feuding warlords fighting over the Legion's bones before his corpse was even cold. Ultio shifted in her blood-darkened suspension fluid, looking down at me, perhaps alert to the turmoil inside my skull. Fear tainted her features with lines of tension she had never worn before. She did not know where to sail, nor whom to fight.
"Our Legion is dying," she mouthed,
and her gargoyles spoke the words with a gentleness I had not thought possible.
Yes, I agreed. It is. But we can save it, sister.
Your sister is dead. I am the Amanesis, she thought,
but bit back from speaking it aloud. She had never hesitated with those words. For the first time since ascending to command the vengeful spirit, she was sure of absolutely nothing.
What do we do?
Altio asked me, informally mirroring the question being asked 100 times across the fleet-wide Vox by 100 warlords, captains, and officers.